We are the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short.
Hello, welcome to the Papers podcast series for the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. I'm Jo Carlo, a freelance journalist with a specialism in psychology. In this series, we speak to authors of the papers published in one of ACAM's three journals. These are the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry, commonly known as JCPP, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health, known as CAM, and JCPP Advances. Today I'm interviewing Senior Clinical Psychologist Tom Cawthorne of the National Conduct, Adoption and Fostering Team at the Maudsley Hospital. Tom and Roz are the leading authors of the paper, Do Single Case Experimental Designs Lead to Randomised Controlled Trials of Cognitive Behavioural Therapy Interventions for Adolescent Anxiety and Related Disorders, recommended in the National Institute for Health and Care Excellent Guidelines, a systematic review recently published in JCPP Advances. This paper will be the focus of today's podcast. If you're a fan of our Papers podcast series, please subscribe on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know how we did with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues. Tom and Roz, welcome. Thank you for joining me. Can you each start with an introduction about who you are and what you do?
Yes, thank you very much for the introductions. I'm Tom. As you said, I'm currently the Senior Clinical Psychologist in the National Conduct, Adoption and Fostering Team at the Maudsley. And before that, as part of my doctorate in clinical psychology, I completed my thesis on the development of CBT for chronic loneliness in young people, where Roz was my lead supervisor, along with Sophie Bennett and Anton Kahl as well. And as well as developing that intervention, we then evaluated it with a single case experimental design, which is where my interest in this area came from. And then we also completed this system. Review as part of that project.
Brilliant, thank you. And Roz?
Hi, I'm Roz Shaffrin. I'm Professor of Translational Psychology, as you described, at the UCL Great Ormond Street Institute of Child Health. And I'm an honorary consultant clinical psychologist at Great Ormond Street as well.
Great, thank you both very much. So today we are looking at your JCPP Advances paper. For clarity, Tom, can you give us a quick description of how the single case experimental design SCED approach works?
Certainly. So maybe to start with a little bit of background. So currently, most interventions are evaluated in RCTs. As most of your listeners will know, RCT stands for randomized controlled trials. And in an RCT, people are either randomized to two kind of intervention arms, and then we'll measure kind of before and afterwards to look to see whether there's a difference between groups, or between, say, an intervention arm and treatment as usual. However, the problem with the RCT approach is it's very expensive, it's very complex, and therefore it takes a huge amount of money and also several years from conception or research evidence to then reach clinical practice. Whereas in comparison, a SCED is a much more straightforward, but also a very high quality approach. So a SCED, or a single case experimental design, looks at participants and measures change over multiple phases. So there's lots of different types of SCEDs, and I'd really recommend that people look at Kasdin's book if they want more information kind of on this. But for example, one type of SCED, which is the one that we used in our study for evaluating CBT for chronic loneliness, is a multiple baseline randomized single case experimental design, where within that design, participants are randomized to one of, we used kind of four baseline lengths, in which they would complete the primary outcome measure kind of each day over a period of time. And there, for example, you'd have everyone starting at the same period, and then maybe one person would complete it for a week, one for 2 weeks, one for 3 weeks, one for 4 weeks, for example. And then you'd measure change during that time. Whereas therefore, some participants would start the intervention after a week, whereas others would start it after 4 weeks. So therefore, you'd really be able to see at what point does change occur? Does it change after the intervention is introduced? Or is it that there's something else that goes on during that period that leads to change for participants? And as you could see in that way, that'd be a much more high quality than a case series, where, for example, we wouldn't know whether it was really the introduction of the intervention that led to that change or some other factor. And then you'd have the intervention phase, during which people would then complete the primary outcome measure again, for example, at each kind of intervention session. And then that would be followed by a post-intervention phase. So that would allow you to see whether that kind of improvement or that change is maintained during that period of time. And again, because participants would enter the intervention phase at different periods, you would be allowed to kind of compare between them and see whether the intervention is removed that leads to things changing, or whether, again, there are other factors going on. At the moment, we've got lots of different types of ways of evaluating interventions. So we've got SCEDs, we've got case series, and we've got pilot studies, as well as RCTs. But this provides a really simple, high quality approach that is based very much on kind of key core scientific principles of manipulating things and therefore seeing how they change.
Thank you, that's really helpful. Can you give us an overview of the paper to set the scene? So, what did you look at and why?
Yes, certainly. So we know from research that CBT is the strongest evidence-based intervention for anxiety. And what we really wanted to look at is whether the current interventions that are named in the NICE guidelines under the evidence section for each of the anxiety disorders were preceded by a SCEDs before they did the randomized control trials, based on this kind of premise, really, that would be a really sensible thing to do because it would lead to more effective prioritization of treatment funding, as well as provide a high quality initial evidence base for different interventions before the RCTs had been completed. So we initially did a primary search of the literature looking at all these single case experimental designs that were CBT interventions for adolescent anxiety disorders. And then we were looking at whether any of them resulted in subsequent RCTs, and if so, whether those RCTs were named in the NICE guidelines. And then we also did a backward search to make sure that we could catch all the papers that were out there, where we looked at the RCTs that were named in the NICE guidelines. And then we went backwards and looked at whether any of them had a single case experimental design before them. Roz, would you like to add anything there?
Yeah, I think that's a great description. Maybe the only thing to add is this construct of hierarchy of evidence. So the idea being that in research, different methodologies have different strength in terms of their robustness. And when you're thinking about a research design, then randomized controlled trial is very robust, but it has the disadvantages that Tom mentioned in terms of the time and so on. So really, before you invest all the time and the money, you want to do a smaller scale study that is less robust in terms of its methodology and the conclusions, but is an important stepping stone, I think. Because if you did, for example, a SCED and really there was not much impact, you'd want to think about that before you went on to doing a randomized control trial. You may want to think about a pilot study as an alternative design or proof of concept and the other ones that Tom mentioned. And within that sort of hierarchy of evidence, they're not mutually exclusive. So in some ways, the clinical opinion is what comes first. Clinical observation is what should start it all. And from that, you think, okay, this is what I think might be going on. How do I test that empirically and moving up the hierarchy, culminating in the strongest evidence that suits the research question? Because of course, also, not all research questions can be answered by randomized controlled trials for ethical reasons. And so SCEDs would have a particular role to play there as well.
That's really helpful. Thank you. You've given us a sense of how the review was conducted, but do you want to say a little more about the methodology used?
Definitely. So I think essentially that was a really helpful summary by Roz. And I think we were really looking at then, is this happening now? So are people doing single case experimental designs prior to RCTs named in the NICE guidelines? But also whether this approach could be helpful. So even if this wasn't happening at the moment, what do these single case experimental designs look like that are in the literature? And therefore, would this be a helpful approach? And therefore, as well as doing the searches, we also use something called the Robint scale, which is a quality measure of risk of biases for SCEDs, and we included the results of this within our systematic review.
Going back to my earlier question with the sort of setting the scene, really, can I also ask about the why?
So in terms of why we looked at this specific population, so we do know that there is a strong evidence base for CBT interventions for anxiety disorders across childhood. However, there is some evidence that this may be less of the case for adolescents. There's lots of research around this, and I would really recommend that listeners look at Kathy Creswell's recent review paper, as well as other review papers on this. And some people have hypothesized that it could be around, the specific changes that occur during adolescence, the lack of engagement, the high levels of co-occurring conditions such as mood disorders. But therefore, this seems like a population where, whilst CBT interventions are really effective, they certainly could be more effective. And therefore, it could be really helpful to look at whether SCEDs could be used as one way of improving the efficacy of interventions by helping us develop new approaches or adapt current approaches and then evaluate them within single case experimental designs prior to RCTs. So that could really expedite the process of new interventions being out there.
So you Your review reveals that single-case experimental designs were not followed by randomized control trials or cognitive behavioral therapy interventions named in the NICE guidelines for adolescent and anxiety disorders. Can you elaborate on this finding? Why do you think this is?
I think that's a really interesting question as to why. And actually, at this stage, it's quite unclear exactly why that is. And I think we need to be quite cautious, therefore, in drawing any firm conclusions. I think one of the reasons is that adolescents are actually a really under-researched population in terms of interventions for anxiety disorders. And currently, therefore, there isn't that many RCTs out there for this population specifically. So I think that's one of the things. I think there are also some more practical challenges related to the design. So, for example, with the single case experimental design, we use a baseline period, which allows us to therefore compare across the different phases of the intervention and see whether it is effective. But that can actually lead to some ethical implications within services, because essentially we're looking at young people that do need support and we're saying, well, we need to wait for this baseline period as part of the research study before they can access it. And whilst, of course, that can be done when we think about young people that are on waiting lists anyway, of course, it is slightly more challenging to roll out. And that could be one thing. I think whilst there are statistical analyses we can use for the SCED. So, for example, the Tau-U approach, it's much less well known. And therefore, I think maybe people have less confidence in using SCED designs for that reason. I think there's a lot of variability at the moment in terms of how to do SCEDs. So the guidelines are slightly inconsistent. So, for example, when we were trying to do our study, I spent a good day or two really trying to look into the power analysis research around SCEDs to work out exactly how many assessment points we needed during the baseline period. And it was really hard to get a clear answer on that. And I think often people do like certainty. And I think in more developed approaches, there's a lot more certainty than with SCEDs. But actually, I think there's a lot of work that can be done as well around raising awareness of the SCED approach. Like, I think it is a really excellent design. You know, it's really simple, but it's also really high quality as well. However, I think if you ask most researchers or certainly most clinicians, no one's really heard of it. I also think it's very hard to access training at the moment on a SCED. You know, for example, if you Google kind of SCED trainings or things like that, nothing really comes up. Whereas, of course, there are loads of different trainings you could access for RCTs, both online and at different universities as well. And I think a final challenge that's maybe less around issues with SCEDs, but also around current NICE guidelines, is that there actually aren't NICE guidelines for several anxiety disorders in children and young people. And there also aren't specific NICE guidelines or recommendations around how we can approach adolescents or adapt interventions for adolescents, despite that being something that's clearly quite necessary as well.
I want to return to that in a moment, talking about research policy, but I just want to pick out something else that I thought was interesting in the review, which is that your paper highlights the fact that CBT is effective for 60% of adolescents with anxiety disorders. Only 36% are in remission post-intervention. What are the implications of this finding?
Yeah, so I think firstly, obviously, that wasn't a finding of our review. That was from, I think, Kathy Creswell's review. And I'd really recommend people to kind of read that for more information on it. I think one of the challenges in this area is, of course, anxiety disorders are comprised of lots of different types of difficulty. And obviously, when we talk about anxiety disorders and adolescents, it's almost oversimplifying it slightly. Because, of course, there are lots of different anxiety disorders. There are lots of different groups of adolescents. And therefore, I think it's quite hard to draw any conclusions firmly on why that is. And I'm wondering if you want to add something on that, Roz.
Thanks, Tom. I think there's also just varying definitions of what remission is, what effectiveness is, what improvement is, and inconsistencies across studies that make it hard to draw any firm conclusions.
Roz and Tom, what other findings would you like to highlight from the review?
I think one finding that we saw is actually that there's a lot of evidence that SCEDs can be really helpful. So if we look at the SCEDs that we did find in our review, that often they were done with groups of young people that either haven't had RCTs or in reality are not going to have RCTs because they're either quite specific samples with lots of different comorbidities where you're not going to find a big group of young people or with those exact same comorbidities, or equally with populations of young people like hoarders who were maybe less prevalent and therefore are less likely to have an RCT. And actually what the SCED design gives gives us is a really high quality research evidence about what could be helpful for these groups of young people, which could really therefore help them to be able to access better treatment. And equally, because it's a really rich design, so it's not just giving us that data, it's also combined with this qualitative, more kind of case study, case series style information. I think it can be a really helpful teaching tool as well. So clinicians can read it and think quite practically about how they can work with these groups of young people or adapt interventions, as well as it just giving a summary. I think another thing is it provides a really good model really for improving practice-based evidence. So at the moment within clinical services, you know, we're doing ROMs, but actually it's not practical to do RCTs. You know, we've got routine outcome measurement. We're looking at how things are like before and after intervention. But to take that jump from doing that to RCTs is not really going to happen in the current economic climate where resources are so stretched and there's not very many people working within services. And actually single case experimental designs can be run by one person or maybe two people if there's someone else doing the assessment before and afterwards. And actually, you really don't need that much resource. And it means that, say, clinicians are working within a service where they've developed a new intervention and they're wanting to evaluate it in a really high quality way. I think that this gives a really good kind of model for how that can be done.
I would just reinforce that and add to it. And it wouldn't even be so clinicians necessarily having a new intervention, but applying an intervention in a new population where actually it's quite hard to get funding for a big randomized control trial. And maybe you don't need to have a big randomized control trial, but you just want to know actually how does this apply? Or if we do an adaptation, how does it apply? And I come across a lot of clinicians who want to do research, but it's not built into their job. It's difficult to do it from the resources, from the time perspective. So having something that is publishable in the way that single case experimental designs are, that shares knowledge and yet isn't all consuming, can be done within a routine clinical service, I think is a real asset and a real bonus and worth thinking about. But it's one of these methodologies that seems to be slightly overlooked. And we're not quite sure why it's overlooked, and not sure if it's overlooked in the States to the same degree. But certainly, I think that there are a few advocates and proponents of the single case experimental design. And I think we would just want to add our voice to that for clinicians to really consider it when they're considering doing research as something that is practical and methodologically robust and appropriate for the stage and research question that they may be considering.
So there clearly are implications for researchers. I mean, what should researchers and research policymakers take from your review?
I think one of the key findings from our review is I think it shows that using single case experimental designs prior to RCTs could be really helpful. And I think if we're thinking about how we can better prioritize research funding when RCTs cost, you know, a huge amount of money, how we can really expedite the prioritization of this funding and identifying new interventions or interventions for different groups of young people, I think what we've shown is that SCEDs could be used for that and could be used really effectively to support with that. And I think what we've shown as well is that SCEDs are a really valuable alternative to pilot studies, for case series, to feasibility studies that have been done at the moment. And SCEDs are really kind of straightforward and just informed by basic scientific principles, really. I think we also have shown, though, that there needs to be much more awareness around SCEDs, and I think far more dissemination and far more teaching, both so that there are more SCEDs, but equally because we need there to be more higher quality SCEDs, because I think that was another one of the findings of our systematic review, is that many of the SCEDs at the moment aren't particularly high quality, and therefore we need better teaching and better dissemination opportunities to support with that.
What about the implications for CAM professionals of your paper?
You know, one of the things that the systematic review have also found is that really SCEDs are the ideal model for practice-based evidence. They are already being used within different clinical services to evaluate even novel interventions with different groups of young people, or equally to evaluate existing interventions with groups of young people that they've not been done with before. And as we said, they are a design that is really quite straightforward and could definitely be done within clinical services.
So do you envisage it that if SCEDs are more often applied, that future NICE guidelines will better represent the adolescent population?
Definitely, because I think if we were able to use SCEDs more effectively, A, we're then going to be identifying interventions where there's preliminary evidence of efficacy before there's an RCT. And actually, SCEDs provide really quite a high quality evaluation. So even then, when we don't have the RCT, we can say, well, we think that this intervention will work really well for this group of young people, which therefore will improve access and improve outcomes. But equally, it will then mean that we can more rapidly conduct RCTs because we can go, oh, we've got this intervention here, or we've already got some really good evidence from the SCED that it's really effective. Let's therefore prioritize this for funding rather than trying to share out this funding across lots of different interventions, some of which we may not actually already have evidence of efficacy. And then that will speed up the research process and therefore lead to better NICE guidelines and equally more specific NICE guidelines for adolescents as well.
And maybe just to add to that the things that are important when you're thinking about conducting an RCT in future, you would want to make sure an intervention is feasible. You would want to make sure that it's acceptable. All of those things are included in SCEDs as well as measures. So it isn't that you forgo some of those other things that are in other designs. They are included in SCEDs. And I don't know if you want to say anything about the statistics needed, Tom, because not all SCEDs have statistics at all. And I think for many clinicians, it's the idea of statistics that puts them off doing research and just being able to do a SCED and do visual analysis.
I think that's a really good point because I think that not only can you do visual analysis either instead of the statistical approach or alongside it, but actually the statistics are really easy for SCEDs. You literally put in your numbers, you press a button, and then it blurts out whether it or not it meets a kind of statistical significance at the P.05 level. Therefore, I think is really something that's quite straightforward and could be done by many clinicians in clinical practice, even if they don't feel that confident in statistics.
What recommendations emerge from your paper?
There are three main areas of recommendation, really. I think, firstly, as we've said, that SCEDs provide this really amazing model for practice-based evidence. And therefore, related to this, we need to find more ways of disseminating knowledge around the SCED, improving the quality of SCEDs that are being conducted. So, for example, with there also being more training opportunities available for clinicians as well. And then I think a third point is we need more specific NICE guidelines for children and young people. And specifically, we also need more consideration of how things can be adapted for adolescents, because I think anyone who's met an adolescent, it's not just a child that's slightly bigger. They are very different and their brains work in very different ways. And I think we need a lot more kind of clear recommendations around how clinicians can kind of work with this in practice.
A question for both of you. So, are you planning any follow-up research, or is there anything else in the pipeline that you would like to share with us?
So in my current service where I work now, which is the National Conduct Adoption and Fostering Team, similarly, this is a group of young people, so care experienced young people, for which there is a real lack of evidence-based interventions and a real lack of research about what kind of treatments actually work. And so within this role, we're looking at how we can use the SCED design to evaluate existing evidence-based treatments, but applying it specifically to this group to help generate kind of much needed evidence.
And Ross?
I would just say that I think that the work that Tom did and we did with developing the intervention for loneliness, CBT for loneliness, was a very good example, I think, of where we wouldn't want to have done a randomized controlled trial. There was an internet intervention that we were basing on in adults in Sweden, and it was wanted to sort of think about it from the young person's perspective. And then lots of different questions came up about the population, about comorbidities, and so on. And it really just reflecting on the experience of doing a SCED was that it was such a useful exercise for treatment development, for understanding personalization of interventions before producing a manual that would go on to be piloted either in an internal or external pilot and a randomized controlled trial. I think learning from the CBT for loneliness SCED really has been inspirational in thinking this is such a strong experimental design. And it is an experimental design, but it's got such clinical applicability. And it's such an efficient research design as well, because it means that you can make some changes, that you can think about optionality and personalization, modularity, transdiagnostic interventions, all of those sorts of things within a single protocol.
Thank you. So finally, Ros and Tom, what are your take-home messages for our listeners?
So I suppose a really key take-home message is really before thinking about, diving into the deep end of large-scale RCTs, just really think about and consider the power of a single-case experimental design.
Ros?
Uniform message. Yep, absolutely, from me as well.
Brilliant. Thank you both so much. For more details on Tom Cawthorne and Professor Ros Shafran, please visit the ACAM website, www.acam.org, and Twitter at ACAM. ACAM is spelt ACAMH. And don't forget to follow us on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know if you enjoyed the podcast with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues.